Okay, good evening to everybody, and those who survived last week, welcome back to part two, and I hope that you'll stay with us from now until the end of the series. There are handouts which are at the entrance. I'd ask you to take them. If you haven't already, I'd ask maybe somebody just to run and get a few. No, they're not the same ones as last week. Each week, I will present to you the slides for that week's lecture. If I don't finish the lecture, meaning if I don't finish all the material, so then I'll work it out for next week and we'll do that. But I'm going to be making the handouts weekly. So what you got last week were the handouts for last week's presentation, which is essentially all the slides. With one exception, this week there's an additional 2 pages in the handouts that's not on the slides, so it's important to make sure that you have a copy with you. Excuse me? Unit 3, setting the calendar. That's what we're up to. Chapter 3. I did 1 and 2 last week. Take a look. It's there. Okay, so welcome back. What I wanted to do this week is continue essentially where I left off, and to do that, I need to bring us all up to speed, or a quick summary, if you will, on where we were at the end of last week's class. I do not expect you to need... Uh-oh. That's not good. Okay. You're going to have to give me a minute to do some technical stuff here. Sorry, just give me a minute. Something's not right, and I gotta fix it. No, that's even worse. There we go. Okay. Sorry about that. This is essentially where we were at the end of last week's class, which is a series of numbers that don't mean a lot per se, except for a few, which I'll show you how things are going to move from here. We talked last week about the fact that the Hebrew calendar is based on 2 numbers. One is the length of the solar year, and the other is the length of the lunar month. The length of the lunar month was measured at 29 days, 12 hours, 793 parts. The length of the solar year was measured as a rounded number at 365 1/4 days, a somewhat more precise number, but less workable in terms of the mathematics of the calendar, called Tkufat Ravada, understood that it was slightly under 365 1/4 days. Both numbers are somewhat inaccurate. The actual calculation of the solar year is a several minutes shorter than that. And in fact, therefore, we lose, in the solar calculation of the year, we lose a day every couple of hundred years. But that's a subject for discussion at the end of the course. The numbers that we need to work with going forward are less the absolute numbers, the length of the year, the length of the month, as much as what happens to the, let's call them the tkufah as an example, what happens to the seasonal moments vis-a-vis the Hebrew calendar. How much does it move vis-a-vis the Hebrew calendar in any given year? Because remember, there's no civil calendar with which to correlate. We have gotten used to the fact that we work with 2 calendars, a Hebrew calendar and a civil calendar. So anything related to the solar year, we simply plug into an English calendar or a civil calendar, and anything related to the Hebrew year, we plug into our Jewish or Hebrew calendar. But the Hebrew calendar doesn't work that way. In fact, it needs to include all of the solar calculations, and it needs to address the question of how much do these fixed seasonal moments move vis-a-vis the Hebrew calendar. And we called those the Tkufa shift, for example, Tkufa Tishrei or Tkufa Nisan, which is a solar fixed moment, the solstice or the equinox. How much does it move in relation to 12 lunar months in the course of the year? And those are the two numbers that we had. In a 12-month year, the seasons will shift a total of 10 days, 21 hours, 204 parts. In a leap year, the seasons will shift backwards, because the leap year is longer than a solar year, shift backwards 18 days, 15 hours, 589 parts. We worked through the calculation of the leap year cycle, the 7 out of 19 years that determine the Jewish leap year. This is a review from last week. If you weren't here last week, the entire lecture and the slides is on the Shul website. So you're welcome to go online and listen and watch the slides and have a good time with it. Machzor HaKatan, the smaller cycle, or the cycle of leap years, being 3, 6, 8, 11, 14, 17, and 19. Those years within the 19-year cycle are leap years, also known as Goach Adzat. The other information that's relevant for us moving forward, and I didn't discuss this last week at length, I just mentioned it at the end of class, the reason for it will become much clearer tonight, and that is, how much does the Molad shift? In other words, Molad Tishrei in 1 year. Let's assume for the moment, for hypothetical argument, Molad Tishrei occurred Monday at 12 noon. When will Molad Tishrei occur next year? Well, we could sit there and do the math 12 times 29 days, 12 hours, 793 parts, or we could realize that since we're looking at mathematics that essentially look at when in the week does a event move, what I really want to know is what day of the week these events are going to occur next year. I know pretty much how many weeks there are in the year. So from a mathematical point of view, it's much simpler for me to work with numbers that are much smaller, and I simply lop off anything that's a multiple of 7. And so my molad, which was 29 days, 12 hours, 793 parts, creates what's called a molad shift, which is the shift of the molad in terms of days and hours from 1 month to the next. That is 1 day, 12 hours, 793 parts. Why? Because 28 days of it is an even multiple of 7, and I don't care about that. So I lop it off, and I'm left with the remainder, which is 1 day, 12 hours, 793 parts. And similarly, 12 months of modular 7, as it's called, or multiple, if I take the remainder after division by 7, generates these two numbers. That's essentially where I left off. It's that concept which I want to explain this evening. That's where we're going to start with. What is this notion of modular division? We are all familiar with it, and I'll prove it to you. We just don't know what it's called necessarily unless we've studied the mathematics of it or studied computer science, in which case the terminology is familiar to us. But we're all familiar with modular division. I'll give you a definition, and then I'll show you why you're all familiar with it. Modular arithmetic is a system of arithmetic for integers where numbers wrap around after reaching a certain value, called the modulus. It's also known as clock division, or clock arithmetic. Why? Because the most common form of this kind of math is the clock. If it's 7:45 now, what time will it be in 5 hours? 12:45. Why wasn't it 12:45? Unless you're in military time. Forget military time, right? We could do the same thing in military time with modulo 24, but that's not my point. Why isn't it 12:45? Because our clock zeros itself every 12 hours. Right. So that's the classic example of modular division. Right? A clock, 7 o'clock plus 8 hours is 3 o'clock. It's not 15 o'clock. Because our clock is made up of 12 numbers. And so my mathematics goes in a circle around the number 12. 12 is my modulus, and all the mathematics is what we call modular 12. That's a classic example of modular division. What we have in the calendar is essentially the same thing, where all our mathematics, for the most part, all our mathematics is going to be modular 7 or modulo 7, because what I really want to know is what day of the week things are happening. The number of weeks is fixed. I already know that. So if I want to know how long where the molad moves to, multiply by 4 weeks, and then how many days, hours, and minutes. So all my mathematics, for the most part, is going to be mod 7 and reduced down to some remainder after I take off all the large numbers that are days multiples of 7. Is that piece of it more understandable? I wasn't sure people caught. I was sort of at the very end of the shiur last week, and I wasn't sure people caught what I was doing, so I just wanted to explain. So based on the information that we have from last week's discussion, we can now begin to calculate one of the most important numbers in the calendar, which is the precise moment for Molad Tishrei. Why Molad Tishrei is so important for us, remember that every month has a Molad. But for our purposes, the only Molad calculation that is really relevant, other than the announcement that we make every Shabbos Mevorchim morning, when we announce the Molad of that month, but short of that, and the one small ritual that it relates to, the Molad calculations for any given month are really irrelevant. Why, I'll show you towards the end of today's lecture, they really play no bearing on the calendar short of Molad Tishrei. Molad Tishrei is the most important because it determines everything we need to know about the year. When Rosh Hashanah is, when the Chagim are, the length of the year, and everything that comes with it. So as an exercise, I just want to show you how the math operates. Let's assume for the moment that I have yet to determine how we get there. But let's assume for the moment that I give you the Molad of Tishrei of 5769. Last year we had a Rosh Hashanah, and so somewhere along the line we had to calculate when Molad Tishrei was of last year. Assuming that Molad Tishrei of 5769 was on Tuesday, 7 hours, 10:57 parts. Let's assume that the Molad therefore took place in real time. That would put it at 1 in the morning on Tuesday, right, because our clock starts at 6 p.m. And we know that it's the 304th cycle, it's the 12th year of the 304th cycle that we calculated last week. Divide by 19, take the remainder, the quotient gives you the cycle, the remainder gives you the year within the cycle, which means that it's a simple year. That's important information. If I have Molad Tishrei of last year, and I want to calculate from it Molad Tishrei of next year, I need to know two pieces of information: when the Molad was, the length of the year, and how many months in the year. So first I have to determine the number of the cycle, the year, so we're talking about a 12-month year, and then I can determine the exact moment of the Molad for next year, namely, Molad Tishrei for 5770 is going to occur on Shabbat 16 hours 853 parts, which Shabbat is easy to figure out. Right? Just multiply by the number of weeks in the lunar year, which in this case is, how many weeks are there in a lunar year? There's no such thing as a solar year in the Hebrew calendar. How many weeks are there in this year? 48. 4 weeks times, right, each month has 4 weeks plus a remainder. So a year of 12 months is going to be, right, 48 weeks plus the remainder. The remainder is 4 days, 8 hours, 876 parts. So 48 weeks later, I add to 3 days, 7 hours, 10:57 parts, the Molad shift of the year, 4 days, eight, which is the remainder after, right, 48 weeks, and I find that Molad 5770 is on 0, 16 hours, I mean Shabbat, 16 hours, 853 parts. Generally speaking, that would lead to Rosh Hashanah on a Shabbos, because Mola Tishrei is on Shabbos. You with me? Okay. The other example that I wanted to share was the alternative, which is the leap year. And it's the exact same calculation. The only difference here is that instead of 48 weeks, our year is 52 weeks. And my remainder after 52 weeks is 5 days, 21 hours, 589 parts. My remainder after 52 weeks is a little bit longer because it's a 30-day month that we've added to the calendar, Adar Bet. So it's essentially adding to the calendar 4 weeks plus 2 days. It makes sense that it should be longer. And my Molad, if I had Molad 5751, which is 5 days, 1 hour, 649 parts, then Molad of 5772 is going to be 3 days, 23 hours, and 158 parts. So does everybody understand the math? It's the math, essentially, if I add these numbers together, 649 plus 589, I'm going to get... Someone will pull out a calculator? Right? You calculate it in your head? Remember that all the math is modulo 7. So this is essentially something like 1080 plus 158. Right? The 1080 carries as 1 hour over into this column. So 21 plus 1 hour plus the carryover of the 1080 from this column is 23 hours. And 5 plus 5 is 10, but 10 modulo 7 is 3. You understand how the math works? No. In fact, I could multiply it out, but if you... All that, what I've done is I've taken... you just have to remember that this column is parts. Parts, there are 1,080 parts in an hour. So any number that comes up here that's larger than 1,080, the quotient by 1080 gets carried over into the hour column, the remainder stays in the parts column. And the same thing happens, it's all modulo division. This is modulo 1,080, and this is modulo 24, and this is modulo 7.
It's like adding a list of decimal numbers.
Correct. Correct. It's exactly the same mechanism as adding decimal, except that we're working not in decimals, but in parts, hours, and days. Yes?
I think this is something I should have picked up last week. I don't follow the premise of the 4 weeks, because we know that a month is not 28 days, but 29 days.
Okay, yeah, correct. So, which is 4 weeks plus 1 day. Okay.
We're doing 4 weeks plus less than 1 day.
No. 4 weeks plus 1 day.
So wouldn't we
the remainder after division by
49, almost 50 weeks?
No. 48 weeks plus 4 days.
Plus a week and 4 days.
No.
That's what I don't understand, because...
Oh, it's 49. Yes, you're right. It's 49 weeks. You're correct. You are correct. If you multiply the remainder of 12... by modulo 7, you're correct. It's 49 weeks plus. Correct.
Okay.
Correct. I stand correct. It's 49 weeks plus the remainder of 4 days.
Because of month, basically 29.
Right. Right. If you add up the day and a half extra over 12 months, you end up with an extra week plus 4 days.
And then on the leap year, it's 29 and a little bit days.
Okay. Correct. I don't want to get too bogged down in the mathematics of it, because that's not really where we need to be. The mathematics are there. I just wanted to show you how the mechanics of it work. I've given you all of the charts. If you want to sit at home and work through the numbers, you can. You can check my math. I don't mind. I've checked it on an Excel spreadsheet, so I'm fairly confident that it works. But what I really wanted to get is to the conceptual framework of it. So I'm going to move forward. If the math is an issue, by all means, then I'm happy to discuss it afterwards. Now, before I get to what our calendar looks like, how many months there are, what are the names of the months, how many days each month has, etc., which is where the life becomes a little more familiar territory to us. We'll get there tonight. Before we get there, however, of course, we need a starting point for our calendar, assuming that we are working off Mola Tishrei, every year. What I've just shown you is if I know what Molad Tishrei is to this year, I can easily calculate when Molad Tishrei is next year. If I know when Molad Tishrei is this year, I can also calculate when Molad Tishrei was last year. But how do I know what Molad Tishrei was this year or last year? Well, obviously, I had to calculate it from Molad Tishrei of the year before, which I had to calculate from Molad Tishrei of the year before that, and the year before that, and the year before that. And I can go back ad infinitum until such point as I have to determine what?
Creation.
A starting point. What, creation or not creation, I need a starting point. I need a starting point for the first Molad Tishrei from which every other Molad Tishrei calculation is going to be based. I know my year length, 12 years or 12 months or 13 months. I know my shift of the Molad from one year to the next, whether it's a simple year or a leap year. And I can calculate that based on my 19-year cycle. But everything has to have a starting point. And so my calendar, no different, has to have a starting point, the first molad of the first Tishrei with which to begin. So how do we determine what that starting point is? And here we're going to enter into a very interesting world of combination of math, science, and biblical exegesis. And the interjection between parshanut, or text of the Chumash and its interpretation, math and science. And we start with the following declaration. The Gemara in Sanhedrin determines, Amar Rabbi Yochanan bar Chanina, 12 sha'ot hayu hayom, or have hayom, the day that Adam was created. I go all the way back to the story of creation. Remember when Adam was created? There were 6 days of creation. Adam was created on the sixth day, what we call Friday, or Yom HaShishi. On that sixth day, says the Gemara, the day is divided up into 12 hours. And the Gemara had a masoret as to what happened on each one of those days. Sha'ari shana, hutzba afro, shniya na'asa golem. The first hour is dust was gathered, and the second hour it was kneaded into a shapeless mass, and so on and so forth. The Gemara has a lengthy description of what happens to Adam on every hour of that Friday afternoon. Until the Gemara says the following. Chi'it, in the ninth hour of the day, and we're talking only about the daytime hours, in the ninth hour, nitztava shelo le'achol min ha'ilan. Adam was commanded not to eat of the tree. Ninth hour of the day is a critical moment. It's the moment around which our discussion begins. That first hour of interaction between God and man, when Adam was commanded not to eat of the tree. And if I work that number into our mathematics, then it determines, it gives us the information we need to determine when the first molad was, or the first molad of the first Tishrei sanctified by Adam HaRishon. How does that work? Well, Chazal determine it to be Friday afternoon, the 14th hour of the day. Meaning, in a 24-hour day, Chazal determined that Molad Tishrei occurred on the Friday that Adam was born at the 14th hour of the 24-hour day, also known as the second hour of the 12-hour day. Do you follow with me? If I start at 6 p.m., that first Molad was at 8 a.m. Well, that's where we're going. Based on the following two possible traditions. There is a machloket in the Rishonim as to what the source is. There are two possible explanations or traditions that give us that number. The first is based on the Gaonic tradition of Rav Yosef Gaon, which assumes that when the moon was created on day 4, it was created in such a way that it would renew itself together with the birth of Adam. And since the Gemara assumes that Adam was created on the second hour of the day, Shniya Nasa Golem, so that second hour of the day, which is 8 a.m., because the day starts at 6 a.m., corresponds to, in our calendar mathematics, the 14th hour of a 24-hour day. So that's the first possibility, is that Chazal assumed that the moon was created in such a way that it would renew itself together with the renewal of Adam HaRishon. Conceptually, the idea is that all of creation was set in motion to begin its process, to begin its functioning, with the birth of Adam HaRishon. There's a certain theological position or assumption that they made. The other possibility is based on Tosfot and Rosh Hashanah, who says that no, it's not based on any kind of assumption that the moon would renew itself at the moment of Adam's creation, but rather on the assumption that when Adam HaRishon was commanded the first mitzvah, which was not to eat of the Eitz HaDaat, at that moment he must have also implemented the first mitzvah, which was to sanctify the new moon that he saw at that time. And the new moon is not seen at the moment of the Molad. The new moon can only be seen 6 hours after the Molad, because if you remember from our discussion last week, at the moment of the Molad, you can't see the moon. And therefore, if the Molad, if in the ninth hour he sanctified the new moon, the Molad must have fallen 6 hours prior to that, or the second hour of the day. Either way, we end up with a tradition which has no scientific basis, but is purely based on the textual analysis and tradition of the story of creation, that the first Kiddush HaChodesh, the first sanctification of the new moon, took place on the 14th hour of the day, which puts the Molad, sorry, at the ninth hour of the day, which puts the Molad at the 14th. At the second hour of the day. I keep jumping between one system and another. Right? If the ninth hour of the 12-hour day is the first time he was Mekadosh HaChodesh, then the second hour of the 12-hour day, or the 14th hour, was the first Molad of the first Tishrei of Adam HaRishon. But we're not finished. Yeah?
9 hours minus 6 is 3. The
beginning of the ninth hour and the end of the second hour.
Right.
Because you're right. It's somewhat inconsistent. That's the terminology that Tosfot uses, that the end of the ninth hour or the end of the eighth hour. It's the beginning of the ninth hour. Have to go back because the Molad operates by the end of the hour and the Mitzvah Kiddush HaChodesh operates by the beginning of the hour. You're right. There's an inconsistency there, and it's based on the language of Tosfot. I'm going to skip it for now. Which brings us to the following dilemma. Assuming that Molad Tishrei of that first year of Adam HaRishon was in the 14th hour of the Friday morning, I have a problem. And the problem is that the world wasn't created on Friday. The world was created 5 days earlier. The Adam HaRishon comes into play on day 6. The sun and the moon come into play on day 4. And the world was created on day 1. Which means that from a theoretical point of view, if Adam HaRishon, if Molad Tishrei of the first Tishrei was on Friday, day 6 at 14 hours, that means that the world was created on day 1, which corresponds to the 25th of Elul. Conceptually, right? And that leads to the sun and the moon created on day 4, which is the 28th of Elul. Here's my dilemma. If I start my calendar from Tishrei of Adam HaRishon, what do I do with the 5 days prior to Adam's existence? What do I do with the last 5 days of Elul?
This is that of
I'm going to skip. We're going to get to the machloket about when the world was created. Nisan and Tishrei is a separate issue. There's a famous contradiction in the calendar, but for the purpose of argument, we're going to assume the world was created in Tishrei. We're going to change that assumption later in the couple of weeks. But for now, let's assume the world was created in Tishrei. The world was created 5 days before Adam HaRishon. If Adam HaRishon was created on Friday, the 1st of Tishrei, then it means that the world was created on the 25th of Elul. Agreed? Now, here's my problem. I can't have a year of 5 days. So in order for my calculations to work off a whole year, Chazal assumed that we are going to create a hypothetical, non-existent, but completely mathematically usable primordial year. Meaning, we are going to start our year 1 year prior to Adam and create a complete year to contain those 5 days. That year is called Shnat Tohu. It's the year in which the Torah describes the world as Va'aretz Hayta Tohu Vavohu. We have no idea how long the Tohu Vavohu was around for. It doesn't matter. For our purposes, we have 5 days we need to put into a calendar. The moment we do that, we have to put in an entire year into the calendar, and therefore we create Shnat Tohu, a hypothetical year starting 1 year prior to creation, which contains Adam's the 5 days prior to Adam HaRishon itself. You could call it year zero. You could call it year zero. You could call it, Chazal call it Shnat Tohu. But however you call it, everything we do in the calendar starts from Molad Tishrei of Shnat Tohu. Nothing starts from Adam. Everything starts from the year before Adam. Which leads us to the following question. Our 19-year leap year cycle, when does that start from? What year? So we assume that our 19-year cycle and all lunar solar calendar calculations all begin with Molad Tohu. It also means that what year is it right now? 5769 from Shnat Tohu. Folks, the world is a year younger than you thought it was. It's true. When we say it's 5769, and we're off to say 5769 from Adam HaRishon, it's inaccurate. It's 5769 from the year before Adam HaRishon. Because Adam HaRishon was born in the beginning of the second year of the world's existence. So what I really need is Shnat, the Molad Tishrei of Shnat Tohu. Now that's easy. Why? Because if I know that Adam HaRishon was sanctified the moon at the end of the eighth hour on the Friday in which he was born, that means that I know that Kiddush HaChod, that the Molad was in the 14th hour of that Friday. All I need to do is work backwards from Molad of Adam HaRishon, which is sometimes called Molad Yishuv, sometimes called Molad Adam. From that moment, 6 days, 14 hours, which I've done here is 13 hours, 1080 parts, just for the sake of simplifying the math, I subtract the yearly Molad shift. Why subtract? Because what am I trying to determine? The Molad a year before. And I come up with the number 2 days, 5 hours, 204 parts. That was Monday morning, technically, or if we want, Sunday night, at 11 p.m., or Monday morning, 5 hours, 204 parts of the day.
How can you have Molad of an object that was not even created yet?
It's completely hypothetical and purely for mathematical purposes. It's an extrapolation, but it starts my calendar. The start of my calendar. I know when Molad Tishrei was of Adam HaRishon. In order to work with a starting point, I start with Molad a year earlier. That gives me Molad Tohu called Barad. You may hear it, you may see it. There's all kinds of drashot about Molad Tohu called Barad, Bet He Resh Dalet, 2 days, 5 hours, 204 parts. Now, the rest of the calculation is easy. If I want to determine when Molad Tishrei is of next year, so I could start with Molad Tishrei of creation, And then I could add the yearly molad shift every year for the last 5,769 years. Right? That would be a lot of mathematical computation. There's a much simpler way to do it, which is to calculate the following. Oops. Which is to assume, and I could either do this, I could molad tohu, start, that's my starting point, plus, let's say I want to calculate the molad tishrei of year n. Whatever n is, let's assume 5770. Then I would multiply the annual molad shift by that number, 5,770 years, or 5,769 years, actually, because I want to know when the molad is at the end of that number of years. Take into consideration, however, that we need to know how many leap years there are in that process. Right? How many times we're multiplying by regular years versus how many times we multiply by leap years. So we're going to simplify all of that calculation and establish a number of fixed constants with which to work. The first is that already we've seen. That's the molad shift of the months after 12 months versus 13 months. There is also the shift after 19 years of the 19-year cycle. How many months are there in the 19-year cycle? 235. 7 leap years, 7 times 13, plus 12 regular years, 12 times 12, multiply it together, you get 235. There are 235 months in every 19 years. So if I multiply 235 times 1 day, 12 hours, 793 parts, which is my molad shift after 1 month, and I multiply that by 235 months mod 7, I end up with this number, which is the molad shift after a complete 19-year cycle. So instead of having to do every year, I really only have to do every 19-year cycle and multiply that by this number here. So that gives me a tremendous advantage. And this is a little Excel program. And if anybody's interested, those are the formulas for each of these boxes to calculate this very quickly. So you're welcome to experiment with it. If you want to build your own, you're welcome to it. So when is molad tishrei 5770? Now here is one piece of information you need. Essentially, what's the process? What's the thought process? I want to calculate molad tishrei 5770. What's the thought process? Forget the math. What's the thought process? Simplify the process as much as you can. Okay. First of all, determine how many 19-year cycles we have undergone since molad tohu till today. How do I do that? Divide by 19 and take the quotient. Then determine which year of the cycle of the newest cycle we are in. How do I determine that? By the remainder. Now I want to know how many years have passed. So I'm not going to count the present year because that's still going. I want to know how many years have passed. So if I determine that 57, what did I do that for? That's 5770. Thank you very much. I don't know why I wrote 50. That's a error. But 5770, you'll forgive me for that one, is the 13th year of the 304th cycle. That means the 303 cycles have passed, plus 12 years have passed. Of those 12 years, 8 have been... Right, 4 leap years. 8 have been... Sorry, skip that for a moment. 8 have been regular years, 4 have been leap years. Correct? So now I multiply 303 years times the 19-year shift plus 8 years times the simple yearly shift and 4 years times the gravid shift or the leap year shift, and what I end up with is that. Just to make life simple, I did it in Excel, so that's the same Excel little box that you saw on the previous slide. So I plugged in the numbers, 303 times 216,595 mod 7 is 222.10.05. 8 times the annual shift and 4 times the leap year shift, all together starting from Molad Tohu. Add the 19-year shift, add the 8 simple years, add the 4 leap years, and I end up with Molad Tishrei of 5770 next year at 0 days, 16 hours, 853 parts, without knowing when Molad Tishrei was last year or next year. And if you want, you can go back and check the slide a couple of slides ago when I said, okay, if I know Molad Tishrei last year, what's Molad Tishrei next year? And you'll find that that's the numbers. Shabbos afternoon, and Rosh Hashanah, for those who would like to know, is on Shabbos this year. Yes?
We calculate the Molad Tishrei. Now, you know, maybe I'm going to get into that. Can we compare it to, in the, you know, the scientific ways to do it today, that those two numbers are really matched?
You could if you redid the calendar, but we won't redo the calendar because it was fixed in place by Hillel HaKatan. It has halachic status. And when we have a Sanhedrin, we'll redo the calendar.
I mean, when we see it, it's 6 hours after the Molad. So, you know, if you take a look at the sky...
It's an average, so it's give or take.
It's
an average. Remember that when they had a dynamic Beit Din system, the Molad of any given month was really only there to determine the potential for when Rosh Chodesh could be. Because then they would wait for witnesses to see the new moon. If they calculated that the Molad was, let's say, Shabbos, 0 days, 16 hours, for 853 parts, they knew if that was the Molad, they knew that the new moon couldn't be seen for within the next couple of hours. If witnesses came on Shabbos at the 6 p.m. or at 8 p.m. and said, we saw the new moon, they had enough calculations to say, you must have seen something else, it's a mistake. But so they had the calculations, but they also had the dynamic process of waiting till they saw witnesses to declare the new moon. Once they fixed the calendar in place, so now we have a fixed calendar. And we know every Molad Tishrei from creation until now. Agreed? We can calculate any Molad Tishrei from creation till today. Now today we can put this into a spreadsheet, and I will show you the spreadsheet calculation to do that. And if you'd like, I can give you a copy of it. And you could just print it out, and you'd have every Molad Tishrei from now until ad infinitum. Calendars didn't work that way, and certainly before the invention of computers, they needed, you know, they could do this yearly if they wanted to, or they could do it and set in place, calculate the whole calendar. And that's, in fact, what they did. And so what you have on this slide, which you have, in case you can't see it, the last two pages of your handout are a copy of these two pages. This is a chart of every Molad Tishrei from the year 4111 until the year 6000. Every Molad Tishrei from the year the calendar was fixed, which is 4111, till the year 6000. And so now I really don't have to think much. I have every Molad Tishrei in a chart. I just showed you the process. That's the process by which it was created. But in fact, now all I need to do is work off this chart, and I can find any Molad Tishrei, which is going to be represented by three numbers. Day of the week, hour, part. So for example, let me just finish this, and then I'll take questions after I finish this unit. So for example, the way this chart works is that there are 9 columns across. It means that there are 9 years in each column. There's every 9th year, the year in the left-hand column jumps. So that left-hand column, for example, is 4131. In column 0, that's the Molad for year 4131. That's the Molad for year 4132. And that would be the Molad for year 4133. Okay, agreed? So what are we looking for? The Molad for next year. So let's go to the next page, and I've given you a little bit of a blow-up of the next page. Starting with this column here, 5761, count across, 5761, 62, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 68, 69, 7, 5770. What's the Molad? Shabbos, 16 hours, 853 parts. Is that what we determined? Is that what we figured out mathematically? That's the number. And that's your chart for the Mola Tishrei of every year in the Hebrew calendar as we have it till the year 6000. That makes life a lot easier. I don't have to do any math now because it's all done for me. Right? Yes. Question. Okay, hold that question till part two of tonight's class when I'll talk about the relationship between Molad and Rosh Chodesh. I have not talked about the relationship between Molad and Rosh Chodesh yet at all. Only, in this case, that's true. And it's only true for Rosh Hashanah and only true for some years. So why hold? We're not there yet. But it's the next piece. I just wanted to get this information on the table first. Yeah.
So the Molad has also an astronomical definition as the conjunction with the moon.
In theory. In theory.
So now I'm asking you the question of, this is all mathematical, but if you do go look now, when is the conjunction?
It's a little bit off. It's a little bit off. And the reason it's a little bit off is because our calculation of the solar month is a little bit off. It's not off grossly. Remember that we're off by about half a second a month. So since the calendar was put in place, half a second a month, it's not terrible. You won't notice the difference from the naked eye. If you measured it by scientifically with the Hubble telescope, you may find that it's a little bit off, but not terrible.
Right. It's off in a plus minus way because of all the corrections that are
right.
Made. Have there been observations? Has anybody with a halakhic bent?
I don't know. The lunar month is so, the margin of error in the lunar month is so small that it's really irrelevant. Because you're not going to build up a day loss for 14,000 years. I showed you that last week. That you'll lose a day in the lunar month every 14,000 years. So because we work off days, not seconds, doesn't matter. The solar calculation is a whole different story. That's off by weeks.
But Molad Tishrei is only 5,000, almost 6,000 years ago.
Okay, so it's a third of it. So it's a third of a day. And if you ask me, and don't quote me on this, and the tape is turning over, and don't put me on record for this. If you ask me, what I think Hillel HaKotan did was they figured out as accurately as they could when Molad Tishrei was that year that they set the calendar in place, and then they worked off backwards and forwards in both directions. That's my assumption, but that would be somewhat heretical, so I didn't say that.
No, even 8 hours is like the whole shift between the 6 hours.
I understand. I hear.
It's more than the 6 hours shift already.
I hear. But that's assuming 5,000 years. I'm not going to. We can leave that. Two more slides before we begin to answer Judy's question. And this is really just so that if you want, those of you who are computer literate and so inclined can go home and create your own Excel spreadsheet to determine your Molad. This is cute. This is basically, I found this in a book. It's in... I can tell you which book it is, but I don't remember offhand. It's basically a Excel spreadsheet, and these are the formulas in each of these boxes. What I've done is I've given you the formula for box A1, box A2, B2, C2, D2, E2, F2. You just put this in exactly across. It's two rows. This in row one, there's one number, and in the second row from column A through I, you have these numbers. If you put this in, what you will get is a chart that looks like that. Namely, it'll tell you for every month of the and every year when the Molad is in hours, minutes, and chalakim. And just to give you a sense of what that looks like, that's what it looks like. That's the first two lines of my chart, and then it gives you the Molad of every month in hours, minutes, and chalakim. Those are your actual numbers, and you can have fun with it. You want the actual rationale to it? The rationale to it is as follows. I take a starting date, and it doesn't make a difference which starting date I used. I could use Molad Tishrei. To make life simpler, I use 1921, because that's what the book had. And I start with Molad of that year, which was a round number in hours, minutes, and seconds. So there was no remainder on the seconds. It was an easy number to start with. And then I add every year of the chart, I add 29 days, 29.53054135A days, which is your decimal translation of 29 days, 12 hours, 793 parts. So I simply add that number and then break it down into hours, minutes, and chalakim. That's the rationale. It's a very simple chart to make, and as you can see, it allows us to print off Mola charts for ad infinitum. No more math. It's all done for us. Right? We use the chart and the luach, but they all come from the same place. You know, we have put, you buy a luach by the Knesset, and it has the molad for any given month. It all comes from the same place. Which brings us to the question that I think everybody here has been waiting for an answer to, which is, what does our calendar look like? What is the relationship between the molad, which we have been talking about for the last 2 weeks, and Rosh Chodesh, and the months, and etc., etc.? And so, here, the story works as follows. To get the second half, setting the holidays and the fourth chiyot, I'll come back to that. We'll probably discuss that next week. I don't think we're going to get to that tonight. I think tonight we're going to basically look at part one, which is, what does our calendar look like? How long is a month? How long is a lunar month, a molad month, astronomically? 29 days. 12 hours, 793 parts, give or take, accurate to within half a second. And since a part is 3 1/3 seconds, any accuracy to within 3 1/3 seconds is correct. Because the smallest unit of the Hebrew calendar is 3 1/3 seconds, so any discrepancy less than that is a non-issue. 12 hours, 29 days, 12 hours, 793 parts. How long is a calendar month? That's a different question. How long is a lunar month? I can give you a lunar or astronomical answer. How long is a calendar month? That is a little more tricky. Why? Because now if I'm building the calendar, I'm creating the calendar. So what are my choices? What are my options for how long I'm going to set a month to be? Excuse me? You and I are going to build the calendar. We have essentially three choices. What are the three choices?
We just have 365 quarter days.
No, that's a lunar year. We don't have a lunar year. This is a Hebrew calendar. We only have lunar months. Okay? How long is a calendar month going to be? Right? The most logical answer is 29 and a half days long. Give or take, right? Except that I have a halachic problem with that. And a halachic problem starts from the following passage in the Talmud. It says the Gemara in Megillah, Minayin she'ein mechashvin sha'ot l'chodashim. How do I know that a month cannot be reckoned by hours? Says the Gemara, she'ne'mar ad chodesh yamim. Yamim eta mechashev l'chodashim ve'yeta mechashev sha'ot l'chodashim. A month of days, you reckon by a month of days, you do not reckon a month of hours. In other words, says the Gemara, a month must be a unit of whole days. I can't have a month of 29 and a half days. A calendar month has to be a whole day, or multiple of a whole day. So now, of my three options, which were, option one was to have my calendar months as 29 and a half days long, that is no longer an option. What am I left with? 29 or 30. 29 is too short. 30 is too long. And that's where the problem begins. If my month is 29 and a half days, a calendar month must be either 29 or 30 days. What do I do with that? The answer is, I have to alternate them. If I'm going to average out the calendar months to match the lunar months, then I have to alternate. Let one month be 29 days, and the next month be 30 days, because if I don't, if I say 29 days for every month, at the end of 12 months, I'm going to be short 6 days in the length of my lunar year. If I say 30 days, my lunar year is going to be too long. So in order to match the lunar months as much as possible and make sure that each Rosh Chodesh is as close to the Molad as possible, I want to alternate the days of my months. Some months will have 29 days, some months will have 30 days. Assuming I average that out, alternating them equally, my years will have 6 months of 29 days and 6 months of 30 days, and that'll solve my 29 and a half day long month problem. In the terminology of the calendar, we call a month that has 29 days. Hi, Basimir. Okay, it's backwards. All right. Just to make sure you're awake, those two lines are backwards. 29 days is called chaser or deficient. 30 days is called mele or full. Okay? So it's backwards, but you get the gist of the idea. Whoa. You don't want to do that. Now, here is one of the great mysteries of the calendar that many of us know, but many of us don't, which is we have a mystery in our Hebrew calendar called Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is a celebration of the new moon. And yet, some months have 2 days Rosh Chodesh, and some months have 1 day Rosh Chodesh. Correct? How did that work? Well, it works very simply, as follows. In a 29-day month, the next day after 29 days is automatically going to be Rosh Chodesh. Why? Because it's the next month. Rosh Chodesh means the beginning of the new month. When I had a dynamic calendar and I had a dynamic Beit Din, and the Beit Din would sit and take witnesses, and they didn't know from month to month whether the month was going to have 29 days or the month was going to have 30 days. If the witnesses came on time and they had the witnesses come at the end of 29 days and say, we saw the new moon, the next day, which is going to be the first day of the new month. If the witnesses didn't come on time and the moon was late, then the next day was going to be day 30 of the old month. Which means that day 30, that first day after 29 days, sometimes would be the last day of the old month, and sometimes would be the first day of the new month. That day 30 is a mystery. It's a day that has the potential to be the first day of the new month. It's a day that has the potential to be the last day of the old month. So that gave it a special status. And therefore they decided, that in any month that has 30 days, that 30th day is going to be the first day of a 2-day Rosh Chodesh. So a 2-day Rosh Chodesh will always follow a 30-day long month. It doesn't head a 30-day long month. It follows. The end of 30-day long months, the first day has a 2-day Rosh Chodesh. The first day of those 2 days Rosh Chodesh is the 30th day of the outgoing month, and the second day of a 2-day Rosh Chodesh will be the first day of the incoming month. So in other words, Lamed Tishrei is called the first day of Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, and Aleph Cheshvan is called the second day of Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. You follow the logic? So a 2-day Rosh Chodesh will always follow a 30-day month. It always lags behind. So far, everybody with me? What does my month look like? What does my calendar look like? Well, this is a bird's eye view of the Hebrew calendar. Bird's eye view of the Hebrew calendar essentially assumes these are the names of the months: Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev, Tevet, Shvat, Adar, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul. I have already put in here the leap year, because we've discussed the leap year at length. So we know that when there is a leap year and Nisan needs to be postponed by a year, so Adar shifts to two months of Adar, Adar Aleph and Adar Bet. So far, everybody with me? Starting with Tishrei, assuming Tishrei has 30 days in it, we're going to alternate the length of each month. So Tishrei will have 30 days, Cheshvan 29, Kislev 30, Teva 29, Shvat 30, Adar 29. Nisan 30, Iyar 29, Sivan 30, Tammuz 29, Av 30, Elul 29. Okay. So in a regular year, it's not a leap year, Tishrei has 30 days and all the other months alternate from there, 30, 29, 30, 29, 30, 29, across the board. Agreed? One exception. There's a few exceptions. We'll come to Cheshvan Kislev in a moment. But this is an exception. When we add a leap year, we always add a month of 30 days. So Adar Aleph is always going to have 30 days. Adar in a regular year and Adar Bet in a leap year will always have 29 days. The additional inserted month in a leap year is always 30 days long. Adar Aleph. So, how many days Rosh Chodesh is Tishrei going to... Well, let's skip Tishrei. I'll come back to Tishrei in a moment. That's a trick question. How many days Rosh Chodesh is Cheshvan going to have? Two. How many days Rosh Chodesh will Kislev have? One. How many days Rosh Chodesh will Tevet have? Two. How many days Rosh Chodesh will Nisan have?
Well, it depends.
No. It doesn't depend. It's always one. Because in a regular year, Adar has 29 days, and in a leap year, Adar Bet has 29 days. How many days Rosh Chodesh will Adar have? Right. Adar will have 2 days. Adar Aleph will have 2 days. Adar Bet will have 2 days. So it's interesting, the way they set the leap year in place, it doesn't change the number of days for Rosh Chodesh. Adar always has two, Nisan always has one. You follow that? And so it ends up looking like that. Woo! Well, like that. Okay? Now, here's your mystery. How many days Rosh Chodesh does Rosh Hashanah have?
One.
No, one. Because Elul has how many days? 29. Which means that Rosh Chodesh Tishrei will have how many days?
One.
Rosh Hashanah is 2 days long. But not because Rosh Chodesh is 2 days long. Rosh Hashanah is the only celebration of Rosh Chodesh that is not day 30 and day 20 and day 1, but day 1 and day 2. The first day of Rosh Hashanah is the first day of Tishrei. The second day of Rosh Hashanah is the second day of Tishrei. The story of 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is a complicated story that has to do with the dynamic Beit Din and the concept of Yontav Sheni. It doesn't affect Rosh Chodesh. Elul always says 29 days. Rosh Hashanah is therefore day 1 and 2 of the month of Tishrei. From a Rosh Chodesh point of view, Elul is 29 days, is 1 day of Rosh Chodesh, even though there's really 2 days because of 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. With me? Now, the last mystery is the fact that Cheshvan and Kislev here, I've shown you in the sequence of the calendar, 30, 29, 30, 29, etc. That's a sequence that should be logical and should work and gives a fixed length of every year in the calendar. Except that Chazal had a different agenda. And their agenda was our next subject of discussion, which is the days of the week in which the holidays fall. And they were very concerned that certain holidays shouldn't fall on certain days of the week. In order to manipulate the days of the week in which certain holidays fall, they needed some variable play in the calendar. They needed to be able to determine this year we're going to have a day longer or we're going to have a day shorter so that they could move the holidays forward or backwards by a day. obviously having to keep in mind, ultimately, a way of keeping the whole calendar in sync. But they needed that play. They needed that ability to lengthen or shorten the year according to the desire of the holidays and the way the holidays would fall. So they introduced 2 months in the year which are variable months. Namely, they took 2 months of the year and they said that we will determine on a yearly basis, based on the needs of the holidays, whether these months have 29 days or 30 days. The 2 months in question are Cheshvan and Kislev. And so the more accurate version of this chart looks like this, which is that Cheshvan could have 29 days or 30 days, which would affect the length of Rosh Chodesh. Which Rosh Chodesh? Kislev. And Kislev would have 29 or 30 days, depending on what they needed, which would affect the length of Rosh Chodesh Tevet. You follow what's going on? No, well, this was in play already when they had a dynamic calendar. This was set in place by the fixed calendar in order to accommodate the rules of the holidays as needed.
When was this done?
By Hillel HaKotel. When the calendar was set in place, they incorporated the rules for Rosh Hashanah. In other words, when they had a dynamic calendar, these rules were dynamic. They always knew they didn't want Rosh Hashanah to fall on Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday. And so they could dynamically manipulate the days of Rosh Chodesh through the year. Any month could be variable month. When they had a dynamic calendar, any month of the year could be 29 days or 30 days, depending on what they needed.
But a witness would come, and they'd deny the witness there.
They would simply shut the doors of the Beit Din and not hear the witness' testimony. It's very simple. If they wanted a 30-day month, they would simply say, wait till tomorrow, Beit Din's gone home. And then they would come tomorrow and they say, okay, great, Rosh Chodesh is day 30.
What happened on Shabbos if you can't assemble the people come?
Oh, they came on Shabbos. That's a whole half of the Masechet Rosh Hashanah, is the fact that that the dynamic process of the calendar overrides certain restrictions of Shabbos, all the rabbinic restrictions on Shabbos.
You could assemble the Shabbos.
Yeah, well, they could if they wanted to, sure. Now, that gave way to, or that essentially creates three types of years. In our calendar system, in addition to leap year versus regular year, that's one variable, I now have a second variable, namely the type of year. The type of year refers specifically to the relationship of Cheshvan and Kislev. In a year, let's do Kisidra first. In a normal year, in a regular year, Cheshvan has 29 days, Kislev has 30 days. However, if they make both months chaser, both months deficient, then my year is a day short, and that year is called chasera, or deficient, or incomplete, or defective, any of those terms used for the English translation. If I put Cheshvan and Kislev as 2 months both having 30 days, my year is a year longer. A day longer, in which case the year is called shlema, or complete, or excessive, however you want to translate. And those are the variables that they can now play with. Not only remember that the leap year is not a variable, it's fixed. 11 out of 17, the 7 out of 19, the cycle is done. Whether the year is chasera, kisidra, or shlema is a variable that could apply to any year, based solely on the determination of when the holidays might fall versus when the holidays should fall. Yes?
Can the first one, the Chasera, can that be inverted?
Kisidra? The only one that could logically be reversed is Kisidra, and there's no logic to reversing it because it doesn't change the length of the year. If my sole intent here is to change the length of the year, then there's no point in reversing it. And then I would keep the sequence, since Tishrei has 30 days, Cheshvan will have 29, and Kislev will have 30. There's no point in reversing it because it doesn't change the length of the year.
So the balance sheet has to be kept, that is, there has to be an equal number of Seder.
Give or take, if I make 1 year Shlema, my goal the following year is to make it Chasera so that I bring Rosh Hashanah back to the Molad. Give or take.
It would seem
flexibility of what days you prefer or insist that given fall, there probably is not the unique solution.
Well, eventually the calendar will repeat itself. How long it will take for that to happen, I'll show you. It's a fascinating calculation. And you don't have to understand the math to it, but it's mind-blowing. The calendar will repeat itself eventually in cycle. There is a cycle. But it's not a cycle you and I are going to live to see. 670,000 years plus? 670, yeah, maybe, you never know. Yes. Absolutely. Some 19-year cycles will have more. The Chaserah Kesidra Shlema process does not coincide or correlate to the 19-year cycle. The 19-year cycle determines what's a leap year and what's a regular year. Within that, any given year, leap or regular, could be any one of these three-year types based solely on when the holidays fall. But remember that my goal is to keep Rosh Hashanah as close to Molad Tishrei as possible. So if for the reasons here, I need to push Rosh Hashanah off by a day, my goal would be next year to shorten the year by a day to bring it back. And if for whatever reasons I have to do that 2 years in a row, I'm going to try to bring it back 2 years in a row. My goal is to keep it balanced, but that doesn't necessarily lead to a cycle per se. No, the leap year cycle keeps Pesach in the spring. Yes, it does. It keeps Pesach in the spring. It keeps Pesach in the spring. That's its primary and sole goal. The only reason it's out of kilter is because our solar year calculation is too long, which means that we are 10 years days past the beginning of spring. That doesn't mean we're out of sync. It means we're 10 days later than we need to be. That's fine. We won't be out of sync until we get 3 months out of line, which isn't going to happen until, 200 years times 60. No, this only determines one day at a time. I need the leap year cycle works with weeks. Yes, there was a question in the back. Yeah. Will you hear when I explain that? No, I explained that a few minutes ago, that Chazal felt that because day 30 could go either way, it could go to be day 30 of the old month or day 1 of the new month, it had a certain kedusha to it. It had a certain latent kedusha potential to it. And so in months that had 30 days, that 30th day is already part of the Rosh Chodesh process. Yeah?
You said a minute ago that if they have 2 days shift, they need to fix it in 2 years. They can fix it in 1 year if they go from Shlema to Chaserah.
Correct. Correct. They can fix it by 2 days, depending on what happens. Correct. Now I'm going to leave you with one more slide. We're not going to get to the what's called the Dechiyot, which are the rules for how this process works. We'll get to that next week. But I want to give you one more slide, because I think this is one of the great mysteries that we don't always understand, and hopefully now it will be clearer. And that is the relationship between Molad and Rosh Chodesh. Judy, this is the answer to your question. It often happens that the Molad is a day off from Rosh Chodesh, sometimes 2 days off from Rosh Chodesh. Because we announce the Molad every month, and then we announce when Rosh Chodesh is, life gets very interesting sometimes. Why is that? So here's the rule. The relationship between the Molad of Tishrei and Rosh Hashanah is the following. Rosh Hashanah is determined by Molad Tishrei. Rosh Hashanah will almost always be the day of Molad Tishrei. In fact, Rosh Hashanah is determined by definition to be the day of Molad Tishrei, with four exceptions. And those four exceptions are called dchiyot, postponements. They are the rules the rabbis used to determine that sometimes we need to push Rosh Hashanah off by a day. The first, most famous of them being Lo Adu Rosh. Chazal did not want Rosh Hashanah to fall on Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. That's the primary rule. And in order to make sure that Rosh Hashanah didn't fall on Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday, obviously, if Molad Tishrei falls on a Sunday, then they're going to do something to the year to make sure that Rosh Hashanah doesn't fall on that Sunday, but rather will be postponed until Monday. That's called a postponement. But Rosh Hashanah is determined by the Molad of Tishrei, calculated, figured out when the Molad is. That's the day that Rosh Hashanah should be. If it's legal, great. If it's not legal, so we apply the Molei Chaser, the Shlema Kasidra Chasera rules of year type to push the day, the holidays off by a year. We extend the year by a day. But the concept is that Rosh Hashanah is essentially defined by its relationship to Molad Tishrei. When is Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan? And what determines when Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan will be? Molad Cheshvan? No. The fact that Tishrei has 30 days. Since Tishrei has 30 days, Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan will be 30 days later, regardless of when the Molad was. And if Cheshvan is 29 days, then Rosh Chodesh Kislev is going to be 29 days after Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, regardless of when the Molad of Kislev was. And so you end up with the following rule. Rosh Hashanah is determined by Molad Tishrei. Rosh Chodesh is determined by the cycle of 29, 30-day month, irrespective, there's two words cycle there, that should be a mistake, irrespective of the Molad of that month. There is no connection, zero connection. I will say it again. There is zero connection between the Molad of any given month and Rosh Chodesh of that month. The Molad could be on the day of Rosh Chodesh, it could be the day before Rosh Chodesh, it could be 2 days before Rosh Chodesh, it could in theory be the day after Rosh Chodesh, although that never happens. There is no connection between the Molad of any given month and its Rosh Chodesh, with one exception, namely Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is determined by Molad Tishrei, with all the postponement rules. But I start with calculating Molad Tishrei. Once I have Rosh Hashanah, and I know how long my year needs to be, because I simply calculate Rosh Hashanah, Molad Tishrei this year, and I calculate Molad Tishrei next year, and I know how long the year needs to be normally, and then I determine the days of the week as far as whether Rosh Hashanah can be legally fall on those days, and then I say, okay, well, if Molad Tishrei would make Rosh Hashanah fall on a Sunday next year, I need the year to be an extra day long, I will make Cheshvan and Kislev 30 days each, and my year will be an extra day longer, and that'll push Rosh Hashanah to a legal day next year. And I work off year to year how long, based on the calculation of Molad Tishrei of this year and Molad Tishrei of next year. That tells me the length of the year. And the holiday rules tells me the length of the year. Any given month through the cycle is predetermined based on this cycle of 29, 30 days and is completely independent of Molad of that month. So, ask me the next obvious question. Why announce it? So why announce the Molad? Every month, we get up on Shabbos Mevorachim, and we announce when Rosh Chodesh will be. Rosh Chodesh Adar Yiyeh B'yom so and so and so and so. And before we do that, we announce the Molad. We announce the Molad on the day of the week, hours, parts, sometimes we try the mental arithmetic of translating parts into minutes and seconds, sometimes we're successful at it, sometimes we're not. We announce the Molad. Why? Oh. So the purpose of announcing the Molad has two goals. One is practical and one is not. The non-practical goal is to be a zecher to be a remembrance, a memory, to be a symbolic gesture to remember a time when the Beit Din used to dynamically determine when Rosh Chodesh was. And then you needed the molad of any given month, because if it was a dynamic process, you wait till you saw the new moon and the witnesses came, and you needed to know when the molad was to determine when Rosh Chodesh could be, so then molad was critical. So as a ceremony to remember the process by which we had a dynamic Beit Din that used to operate monthly, we announced the molad. And if you'll notice, one of the things that, I don't know if you noticed it was as a change, but one of the issues is that some poskim are makbid, that when the chazan stands to announce Rosh Chodesh, he be flanked by two people, so that there be a semblance of a Beit Din there. Because the process of Kiddusha, of Mevarchim HaChodesh, of announcing the new moon, why do we need to announce it all together? Just look up a calendar. I don't need to announce it. I don't need a ceremony of Mevarchim HaChodesh in order to determine when Rosh Chodesh is. I have that already predetermined in my calendar. Everybody go home, get your calendars, either from the shul or from one of the funeral homes, and you've got your, look it up. But the fact is that the process of announcing Rosh Chodesh was part of the ritual of the operation of the Beit Din. So as a zecher to a time when we had a Beit HaMikdash, we monthly go through that process of publicly announcing or declaring when Rosh Chodesh is, and therefore we include the molad in that process. That's the theoretical or symbolic role for announcing the molad. The practical determination for announcing the molad is that there is really only one halacha left today that builds off the molad calculation, and that is till when in the month you are able to say the bracha of Kiddush Levana. Kiddush Levana can be said as long as the moon is waxing. When the moon starts to wane, you can no longer say Kiddush Levana. And so the halacha is you can say Kiddush Levana up to 15 days from the molad, not from Rosh Chodesh, because Rosh Chodesh could be a day or two late. So you can't say Kiddush Levana up to the 15th of the month, because the 15th of the month isn't always the moment when the moon starts to turn from waning, from waxing to waning. That's determined by the molad. And so, in fact, the only halacha that's built on the molad of any given month today is the last opportunity to recite the bracha of Kiddush Levana. That's the answer to the question of why we announce the molad. So just to summarize, we're not going to go further tonight because we've overstepped our time limit. But just to summarize, we have looked at the calendar in terms of the Rosh Chodesh sequence, 29 days, 30 days. When does the calendar begin? How many Rosh Chodeshes does each month have? And we looked at when the entire process of the calendar begins, Molad Tishrei of Shnat Tohu, and how that was calculated. What we will do next week is we will pick up from these slides. For the most part, we're going to be in this handout that I gave you today. We will be here for most of next week. Possibly, if we finish it, we'll go on to the next one. But that is, we're going to look at what those rules are for the determination of the day of Rosh Hashanah, what is called the Dechiyot, and then you'll understand a little bit more of the statistics of why Rosh Hashanah and Pesach fall on certain days of the week more often than other days of the week. And that some of the mystery of the statistics of the frequencies of the calendar will be our address for next week.